This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Authorities in McIntosh County, Georgia, say 40 people were on a gangway on Supelo Island when it collapsed Saturday. At least 20 wound up in the water. They've recovered seven bodies. Captain Chris Hodge said there are also serious injuries.
We have six people who were critically injured, and we have two people who have been life-flighted outside to other hospitals for treatment.
President Biden says he's heartbroken. On the campaign trail, former President Trump was in Pennsylvania Saturday. Vice President Kamala Harris was in Detroit, then Atlanta. It's 16 days to Election Day. The Hamas-controlled Gaza Health Ministry says at least 87 people are dead or missing after overnight Israeli strikes. And the New York Yankees going to the World Series for the 41st time in their history after beating the Cleveland Guardians 5-2 in Game 5 of the American League Championship Series. They'll play either the L.A. Dodgers or New York Mets in the World Series. This is ABC News. Class of 2024 inducted last night into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. One of them was Cher, who said the biggest part of the honor was,
"It's the people I'm being honored with and the people who've already been honored. That's the part that makes me feel good."
Those other honorees included Peter Frampton, Kool and the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, the Dave Matthews Band, Foreigner, and Dionne Warwick. Meanwhile, English singer Zayn Malik postponed his planned U.S. tour, citing the heartbreaking loss of his former One Direction bandmate, Liam Payne. Recent concerns over Listeria now include frozen waffles.
The voluntary recall covers hundreds of frozen waffle products sold in leading retailers, including Walmart and Target. The makers, Treehouse Foods, says it took the action after discovering possible contamination during routine testing at its plant. It says it notified U.S. and Canadian regulators, put a complete list of brands and stores on its website, and say there have been no confirmed reports of anyone sick.
I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Christina Reynolds of Emily's List. Donald Trump had a quasi-town hall.
There were two questions, one on abortion and one on IVF. What he did was claim he just wanted the states to get to decide, and it is a lie. When they call it a national minimum standard, they are saying we want the federal government to get to decide and not you.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Carl Sarecki from Door County Trolley. Have you ever lost anybody on one of the tours?
The question really isn't did you lose people or did you gain them? True story, one of our drivers.
So he gets home, picked up a spirit along the tour.
Yeah, he's in bed, and then all of a sudden the treadmill starts up on him.
See, if I were a ghost, I think I would just get liposuction. I don't think I would mess around with cardio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The candidates for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin have starkly different views on reproductive rights. Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde debated Friday night. Hovde says Wisconsin and all 50 states should decide for themselves.
I think we as a state should resolve this issue with a referendum where everybody gets a right to vote. The voters get a right to vote, I get a right to vote.
Baldwin says the better way is to codify Roe v. Wade nationwide.
Your rights and freedoms should not depend on your zip code or the state in which you live.
The race has tightened, and the outcome in Wisconsin could determine the balance of power in the entire U.S. Senate. Senator Baldwin has accused Eric Hovde of saying single parenthood leads to poverty and drug addiction. Here's Tricia Young with a Wisconsin Watch fact check.
Hovde, who was running against Tammy Baldwin, was criticized in a Baldwin ad for allegedly suggesting single motherhood leads to household poverty or drug addiction. Hovde said children, quote, born out of wedlock, unquote, face a, quote, direct path to poverty, unquote, citing studies linking single-parent households to higher drug rates. Studies support this correlation, particularly among low-income households. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Learn more at wisconsinwatch.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Sunny skies for today. Southwest winds on the breezy side as highs approach 80 degrees this afternoon. Clear skies, lower 50s, light south winds. On Monday, just a bit cooler, mostly sunny skies, south winds, highs in the upper 70s.
Right now, it's 58.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning, we'll have a guest from Planned Parenthood on how the fight to restore women's health care rights is not losing steam as Election Day draws near.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up!
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, didn't cut it even.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Kadigi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, Wendy, have you seen any good plays lately?
Actually, I have. It's a wonderful show playing right now off Broadway in New York City called Distant Thunder.
Oh, it would be great if we could get the star and the writer on.
Wouldn't it be just fantastic?
Hey, welcome, Sean. Welcome and introduce yourself in a good way. We are so pleased and proud to have you on. What a great performance. And Wendy and I are theater snobs, and we really, really, really love Distant Thunder.
Oh, thank you. Niksu Koex, Nistu Anikok, Sean. Hello, my relatives. My name's Sean. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me on. It was such a pleasure to have you in the audience for Distant Thunder. And we're just having so much fun here off Broadway. First
podcast is brought
musical off Broadway. It's so awesome.
We got to do the show before the play, and it's at ART New York Theaters, 502 West 53rd Street. And it's a musical. And I'm telling you, I love the mixture of traditional music mixed in with Broadway music. It was amazing, Wendy.
Yeah, but Sean, what we want you to do is tell the audience what the show is about, but don't give away too much.
Yeah.
Yes. That's always hard because I want to talk about the whole thing. But it's very, very much a coming home story. And it's also about language preservation. A lot of it is based on my journey with my Blackfeet community. And a character comes home with great intentions for an economic opportunity, which ends up threatening the language immersion school where the Blackfeet language is taught. And the whole community gets involved on both sides of what's needed. And a lot of it, you know, much like the main character coming in, I come from over pop music background, and I collaborated in this show with the Florendo family, and we included a lot of their powwow songs with our pop music to create this unique blend to make a new Native American musical. But it centers around Indian days in the Blackfeet community, which is where I first went at 15 as I reconnected coming back home. And it's kind of very humorous as well as the audience follows this character immersing himself back into a community that embraces him ultimately. But I won't tell you all the things that happened, but it deals with a lot of the issues that young people face in our different communities, and that idea of how do we take on the teachings from our elders. You know, how do we really work hard to maintain those teachings and use them in our modern day world? And it's been a lot of years we've been working on this. So a lot of my own experiences from the ceremonial world and all the lessons I've been learning are in this. And they, you know, when I first started going into Okan ceremony with the Blackfeet, you know, they called me New York because I didn't have a lot of experience growing up with horses, putting up teepees or anything like that, but they threw me right in, and we have a lot of fun now, and they make fun of me out of love, but I'm getting better. So,
well, Sean, too, it's based on a book, and do you want to talk a little bit about the book, and then you turned it into a play, correct?
Well, my mom and I, it's original. We wrote the story ourselves. My mom is the one that took me to Browning when I was 15, and I asked her a long time ago, could you help me write this story since you were there for so many years with me and seeing everything I've been through? And we wrote this play together over 12, 13 years. And my writing partner, Chris Wiseman, wrote the music, but a lot of this is our own family dynamic and a lot of the arguments, you know, as a family between my dad, and it's very much a father-son story and reconciling a relationship and reconciling families, working out problems. A lot of that is from our family, and a lot of that dialogue is very, like, I can remember a few times, oh, I remember hearing that. So it's very personal, and that was very scary at first, but actually now I feel okay airing out my whole life for everybody.
I have to also say, Sean, you have a wonderful singing voice, which I didn't know because we saw you in a play, a different play.
Was that Between Two Knees?
Yes, oh, Between that's Two right. Knees. Yes, that's where we originally saw you. And now this one, you're singing, you're dancing. Tell us a little bit about the music and how you came up with all, like, the lyrics of the music. And the other cast members in this show are just so, like, dynamic and wonderful. Was there, like, did they have to try out? Were there a lot of people who came forward? Or did you personally pick these, you know, people?
Well, over so many years, I mean, when we first started, I have to give credit to Native Voices at the Autry in Los Angeles. We didn't know where to look for cast members. I mean, I had friends and we had demos that they helped us make. But as far as, like, really, we have 15 Indigenous actors on the stage, you know, and that's very, very rare, especially for a musical. But we always wanted to find the top Indigenous talent around the whole country. And so some of our members, including one of them there in this picture, Spencer Batiste, who's he looks very young still. He's been with the show since 2012 and from LA. And then Michelle Rios, we did In the Heights together in New York. But the Florendo family I met when I was in Oregon, and they just were, Brent is an educator and an artist, and he just took me around the drum. He sat me down on the drum for the first time and I learned his family songs. It's been years of finding all of these top talented actors. But what's really exciting is when I first started acting in New York, I didn't know a lot of other Native actors in musical theater. But when we had auditions in New York, there were so many young Native actors coming out of college programs, musical theater programs that came in, and they blew me away. It made me so happy. Because it just seems like more and more Native artists are seeing that as an opportunity for their careers. And so Aubie Billy, she's Seminole. She was a high school student 2016, and she's one of the most talented young actors I've ever found. I think she'll be a Broadway star. And she came back this audition process and just blew it out of the water. And it was like, we have to work with her. So it's kind of like through those artists, we also meet their friends and that's how we accumulate all this incredible talent.
It's unbelievable.
It is incredible. Yeah. And, you know, Wendy, we got to just ask a quick, it's Distant Thunder. It's off Broadway show. What's the website so people can look at that during the commercial break?
Oh, that's great. So it's amasmusical.org, A-M-A-S musical.org. And you can see all the dates and the cast bios and the history of the show. And it's a great place to check out.
Hey, we are talking about Distant Thunder, which is my native name, and we're really excited. Wendy's jumped on here, too, because we're theater snobs, and this was a great, great play, musical.
Awesome, yes.
Hey, we'll be right back, and this is Native Roots Radio.
Stay with us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, Wendy, who do we have on today? We have a great guest here, Sean Taylor Colbert, and he's an actor, writer, and creator of Distant Thunder, a new American musical off Broadway. And again, we saw that great play, and I just loved, I know you were talking about music, I just loved how they incorporated kind of Broadway music mm-hmm. with traditional drum music. I got teary-eyed.
I felt like there were certain times during the play that I felt like I was at a powwow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, it opens with a powwow and is the best thing ever. It's just because the audience is like not expecting it. You're expecting to see like, oh, we're at the theater. And then all of a sudden you're just brought into this powwow, into Indian days. And it's beautiful because that's where it all began for me. And what impacted me the most when I first went to Browning, it's what I, you know, and you just, it was so magical for me. So that we get to do that with the audience each show, it just starts it off. And then all of a sudden, then it switches real quick. And my character, you know, comes on and I'm clearly an outsider, you know, and it's just like, whoa, where are we going with this? And so it's kind of like that balance, you know, of powwow music, powwow dancing with regalia, and then like this outsider, and I'm singing a pop song at first, and slowly the worlds kind of blend, and that's what makes this so unique.
And it pops, and it's really done well. Wendy, I know you have a couple questions.
You know, I have like a million questions going through my mind, but I always like to ask people, like, how did you get started in this, or what was your inspiration to become an actor?
Well,
and if
you
weren't an actor and you weren't doing this, what yeah. would you want to do?
Well, you know, I didn't, it was kind of hard for me because I grew up with a family of artists, and my mother is a director and choreographer. Okay. And I grew up in ballet classes, you know, and tech rehearsals, and around musical theater, you know, and then my father was in the recording industry, and he brought me to recording studios. So I was so, and funny enough, when I was a young kid, I played in eighth grade, I played Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof, and I thought I was amazing, but I realized, oh, everyone's laughing because, you know, it's a small native brown guy doing an old Jewish man, and they thought that was the funniest thing ever. And I thought, they must love me. But I love, you know, so my whole family just really influenced me, and I wanted to give it a shot, and thank goodness I did. I love working with my mom, and I loved everything I've gotten to do in my career. But if I hadn't been an actor, you know, I was studying international relations and I wanted to be a diplomat.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I spent time in the Middle East, and spent time in Israel, and I spent time in Colombia, Asia. And I thought, really, that's what I'm going to do. But then when it came time to do that, I thought, I want to work somehow with my native people, you know, and I don't want to be away so much. So now I found a way to do that and be an artist. And
wow.
Sean, I don't know if you remember when Wendy and I met you before the play, and I said, my name's Distant Thunder. And you said,
my name is also Distant Thunder in the Pekani language. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy.
That is
it
wild.
It really is. Could you tell our audience how you say your native name in your native way?
Yeah, it's Ich Pioxisticum. Ich Pioxisticum. That's Distant Thunder in Nitsipuaxin, which is the Blackfeet language. And I'm getting better, you know, and I'm working on the language every year. I go back, and it's really like, there's nothing like being immersed with first speakers when you're to learn the language, you know. That's how I learn it best. And but I got that name 5 years ago during the Ocon ceremony, but it was just so cool that, how do you say it, Robert? How do you say your name?
Wakunjahade.
Wakunjahade, that's right.
Yeah, Distant Thunder. And, you know, I came back to my tribe after being gone many, many years like yourself, and I just think our name is so apropos because we've come back, and we're making things happen.
That's exactly right, and I'm so blown away by what you all are doing, and huge fan of you guys. So it's in the play, well, I won't give away too much more, but Distant Thunder, the name is a significant thing in the play as well. And it's has to do with some of the younger people who are deciding if they want to stay, what's the significance of learning their language and their culture. And so that name has a big significance in the show.
Well, we've been keeping track of you, and there's been a few people that have showed up that we went, whoa, you know, do you want to name drop for us? Because that's amazing that people are there coming to support you, like you said earlier.
Yeah, you know, so opening night, you know, I didn't know if he would come, but, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda showed up at the opening, the writer and creator of Hamilton and In the Heights, and songs from Moana. And he's got Warrior coming out, a new album, Warriors. So that meant the world to me. You know, we worked together on In the Heights, and he's been following this journey. And he and his father, Luis Miranda, they really wanted to support us and help us bring this unique voice to musical theater, which has never been done, a native voice. And so they were there.
That's
that was really,
awesome.
Really special.
I want you to name drop the people that did your poster, because I was just looking at it again, and I kind of get emotional because that kind of tells the story.
You mean the one here? Yeah. Well, Marissa, you know, arranged all this actual design, and she put it together. Marissa Quintanilla, who was our original Dorothy, in LA in 2012. And it's pretty significant because it does, yeah, it's pretty much how the start of the show feels like, you know, and and it's kind of going back home, but I'm an outsider. I'm a lawyer, and I come right into Indian Days, which is how I saw my first impression of Browning was driving over this hill to like 60 teepees and during Indian Days. And it was just beautiful. So yeah, we're having a great time.
Yeah. Really, and we should ask, how long is the show going? I think till October 27th, right?
Yeah. The show goes until October 27th. And, we have seven shows a week. So Tuesday through Friday at 7 p.m. Saturday, we have two shows, 3 p.m. and 7:30, and then Sunday at 3 p.m. And we have two more weeks.
We were in the front row, Wen.
Yeah, we were in the front row. And it felt like I was like right in there on the stage with you guys. And it was just, you know, the music and the songs, and I was so emotional. Like I teared up a few times, and I laughed. So it had everything. Like I was laughing, I was crying. It was just really, really, really heartfelt, really, very emotional. And I just have to say, it was wonderful. It really was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
I got emotional when I heard the high singing native voice too.
Oh,
in the background, listen, that just really hit me.
Ava Florendo, she is she's probably one of the top singers I've ever heard in my life. She's like, so having that, her voice and her artistry in there is just, it blows the audience away. You have to come and see her perform. It's truly amazing. I was going to say as well, what's interesting is that I'm used to doing musicals in really large theaters, and you're very, like you both were saying, this is a very intimate space. And so you get an extra, I don't know, something extra from being so close to the, you feel like you're in it a lot of the times. Yeah. And we have to be, you know, when you're in a big space, sometimes you can kind of get away with a few things, but when you're in that space, everyone sees everything. So you have to be fully immersed in every moment. Otherwise it won't read true, you know?
Well, musicals are not only singing, but there was a lot of dancing, and there was a few times I wanted to get up and join in.
Well, that's what I mean, there are a couple moments we were thinking, next time we do it, we have to give the audience permission to, you know, in one of the bars, like clap along or get up maybe at some point and dance. Although my mom would, as a director, have a nightmare. Like, how do we make sure you know? And then I've been in shows where people come on and they kind of take over a little bit, and you're like, oh no, how do we stop?
Yeah, I could see that.
Hey, Haley, we got a minute left. Do you want to just throw out the deets here real quick again?
I mean, the website is, I don't have it up in front of me right now.
It's amasmusical.org. So amasmusical.org. And it's at Art New York Theaters, 502 West 53rd Street, on the corner of 10th Avenue. And we run until October 27th. And, you know, if you find me on Instagram, or actually Distant Thunder the Musical on Instagram, give us a follow. I'm Sean TC 37, and all the info will be up there.
Well, Sean, thank you so, so much for being on. We got to do this again real soon. Good luck, and we can't wait to see the play again.
Absolutely. Thank you both. Thank you all three of you.
Big Peeny Gigi. Hey, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
Stay with us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Authorities in McIntosh County, Georgia, say 40 people were on a gangway on Supelo Island when it collapsed Saturday. At least 20 wound up in the water. They've recovered 7 bodies. Captain Chris Hodge said there are also serious injuries.
We have 6 people who were critically injured, and we have 2 people who have been life-flighted outside to other hospitals for treatment.
President Biden says he's heartbroken. On the campaign trail, former President Trump was in Pennsylvania Saturday. Vice President Kamala Harris was in Detroit, then Atlanta. It's 16 days to Election Day. The Hamas-controlled Gaza Health Ministry says at least 87 people are dead or missing after overnight Israeli strikes. And the New York Yankees going to the World Series for the 41st time in their history after beating the Cleveland Guardians 5-2 in Game 5 of the American League Championship Series. They'll play either the L.A. Dodgers or New York Mets in the World Series. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers get the win at Northwestern. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers jumped out to a 14-0 lead and went on to defeat the Wildcats at Northwestern 23-3. Head coach Luke Fickle on what stood out in his team's performance.
Defensively, I thought we did a hell of a job. I thought the defensive guys interiorly really, really did a good job. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They limited the run game, which gave us opportunities to, you know, when we could get after the passer, to get after the passer a little bit more. It's nasty in there, and those guys had to take pride in what we were asking them to do.
The Badgers had good field position and a blocked field goal on special teams. What about the offense?
Interior offensive line wise, I think that it was a battle. I don't know that there was any domination, but I think the body blows that just happened over time in that game led to what it did in the second half.
Running back Tawie Walker rushed for 126 yards. Quarterback Braden Locke threw for a touchdown and ran for a score. The Badgers are now 5-2, and they host number 3 ranked Penn State next weekend. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Sunny skies for today. Southwest winds on the breezy side as highs approach 80 degrees this afternoon. Clear skies, lower 50s, light south winds. On Monday, just a bit cooler, mostly sunny skies, south winds, highs in the upper 70s.
Right now, it's 58.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like
it's only glass.
It's only
tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media radio network.
The Todd Alba Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
And I heard the scientists say the other day that when a man votes for a woman, he actually transitions into a woman.
What Jesse happens Water. When a woman votes for a man?
Turns into a man.
Well, that's okay, though.
That's fine.
Yeah, because then she gets control of her body.
Oh.
I see what I did there?
Yeah.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapaho way, you got to pray for yourself as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, I've got Michael Sozan, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to discuss Trump's attacks on democracy. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Stronghearts Native Helpline. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Stronghearts offers culturally appropriate support and advocacy for Native Americans. You can call or text them for free anytime at 1-844-7-NATIVE or chat online at strongheartshelpline.org.
Hey, we're going to have our special guest here, our friend Rita Arndt, who's program and outreach manager with Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. Welcome, as always. Great to see you. I feel like I've seen you all the time now, all of a sudden.
I know. I hope you're not sick of me. I'm totally not sick of you yet.
Well, cool. We have the fun stories to share with people, and it's always good to see you and your crew out in the community. And again, a big peeny gee. You had that picture of a Ho-Chunk back in the day for me, and I really appreciate you thinking about us here in Minnesota. One of the questions I want to start off with is, where is the Minnesota History Center located?
That is a good question. Our main location is the Minnesota History Center, which is located in downtown St. Paul. It is essentially off of 94 and Kellogg Boulevard. I like to say it's across the highway from the Capitol, because it is. And so it's really, that's where you can kind of locate us.
Yeah, and it's pretty newer building too. I remember when that was built, but then again, I'm old, so I guess it could be an old building.
It's 30 years old, so depending on who you ask, it depends how new or old it is. So sure.
Haley, is that old?
It's older than me, so yeah.
Exactly. Hey, so, you know, how do Native American initiatives at the Minnesota History Center collaborate with the community and to hold events in your space?
Well, we do it multiple ways, and I'm here to use this as a resource. The History Center is just one of our 26 sites throughout the state. The James J. Hill House is one, the Mill City Museum, Fort Snelling, and then places out state like the Mille Lacs Indian Museum and Trading Post, Jeffers Petroglyphs, all kinds of things. So don't just limit us to the History Center. We're able to utilize different spaces to have programming and whatnot. And how we like to approach is really partner with community and be like, this is your space. The History Center is a space for you. So if you want to have your programming or having your event at the History Center, please reach out to us and we will help you coordinate that. We've had some storytelling events in the past, and we have actually a few things coming up in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, well, let's talk about those, because I know there's a couple of events that I heard of that are really important, and we got to get that out there to our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most exciting one is the Native American College Fair, which is next Monday, October 21st. This is our second year hosting it at the History Center. It's really great because that building there's multiple levels, and to be able to utilize that entire space is really great for that event. There's going to be over 40 different post-secondary opportunities sharing really about colleges, financial aid, other opportunities to do besides college after after high school. Mm-hmm. And another great aspect to that is we have an auditorium space where they have speaker panels talking about what to do, how to do financial aid, how to apply for college, how to do all these things. So there's a lot of different things going on, and it's a really great thing. It's exciting because you see all the young students who are just trying, figuring out, what do I do after high school? What does that look like? And I think it's a really fun time. And there's also Native food trucks that are going to be there too. So that's always a plus for us.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, talk a little bit about the parking, because it's really easy to get there and park.
Yeah, if the parking is, we have a full lot available for folks to come in and park. And so we try to make it as accessible as possible and really work with folks to be able to access that space. So we try to make, get rid of as many barriers as we're able to in order for community to be able to come to the History Center and not have to deal with anything extra that they might have to. And like thinking about, downtown St. Paul, sometimes there are those parking fees, there's parking ramps and all kinds of things like that. So trying to make things as easy as possible.
And it is, I just wanted to remind everyone of that if they've never been there, it's a easy way to get there and park. And really make it accessible for the community. And that's awesome because, I mean, I'm a parking warrior and I don't have to be there. I just pull up and choose from, if I get there early enough, choose my favorite parking spot. So, what else do we got going on here too? And I want to swing back and talk about the date later in the sure. next segment again, but we got some, we've had the people of this documentary that you're going to be showing, and I think it needs to be shown everywhere. And you guys are going to be showing this as a, I believe, a free event of the Bad River documentary.
Yeah, we're so excited to be able to show the Bad River documentary at the History Center on Thursday, November 7th, the evening. It's from 5 to 8. It's free. We have this lovely auditorium space, like I said, so it can be set up like a movie theater as well. I was like, we're not going to have all the snacks, but we'll be able to have access to the exhibits and other things, because Thursday night is also our free night any night every week. So if anybody is interested in coming to see the documentary, and then you can check out the exhibits and stuff too. So it's a great opportunity to come visit the History Center.
Yeah, it totally is. And what a powerful documentary. And you know, it's on a couple of the streaming, but I really believe that powers with numbers and people watching it. And it's a different experience when you're watching something like this on the big screen with other people.
Yeah. I look forward to the conversations that we'll have with community members after the screening. I'm thinking about the future and why water is so important and all these other things. It's just, I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, Rita, I don't know if you know this, but we started the show because of Standing Rock. And 8 years ago when that was going on and there was misinformation and things like that, or no information, and that's how Native Roots Radio started. And we talked about every week what was happening up in Standing Rock and had guests, and Bad River's having the same issues as the Standing Rock tribe, and with Line 5 and Enbridge again. So it's a very powerful documentary, and it's free, and it's always great to see again, you know, these kind of things with other people, and then you can have discuss afterwards too.
Yeah, and you can come see our exhibits, Our Home Native Minnesota and Reframing Our Stories, if you haven't yet.
Yeah, and you can do that at the same day or any time?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, any time. I was like, those exhibits are open for in TBD until they're not. So please come visit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those then, too.
Okay. Well, Our Home Native Minnesota, we're actually close to the five-year anniversary of that. And we had all these hopes and dreams, but then COVID happened. So it has kind of changed how we do programming and stuff. So we're trying to reamp up, because it does tell the story of Indigenous Minnesota. And we really try to focus it through a contemporary lens, because one of the biggest things is that folks don't think that Native people still exist. And we confront that immediately. So nobody can get confused about if we're still here. This is what we do. This is important. All of these things are important to us and will remain to be.
Definitely. And that's powerful. And again, you can come see that on the free night or any other time. And the address, again, I want to just really bring that up again, is that it's 345 West Kellogg Boulevard in St. Paul, with plenty of parking. And you know, the History Center has a lot of things to offer. There's other things going on in there too, but I know we're focusing on our Indigenous stuff, but there's so many other things too for other people to see.
Yeah, we have several exhibits like on display at different times. One of the current exhibits as a traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian is called Girlhood. And it is about, you know, growing up as a female and what that is. And our Minnesota aspect, as I mentioned before, is about basketball. So we have folks like Brooke LaFleau talking about her basketball and everything, and just thinking about her tournament this past weekend. Like, it's just so important to share those stories. And she also, you know, really focuses on that missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. So I really appreciate that we were able to add that element to that exhibit. So that one is a limited exhibit. So please see that before it goes away in the spring. But there's a lot going on. And we have a library, too. So if you want research stuff, we can totally talk about research stuff on day two, because we have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you do. And I know a lot of Native American stuff, and your publishing company did Banished, which was the removal of Ho-Chunk from Minnesota. And I don't know if you know the numbers or who knows the numbers, but I feel like there's so many people that are interested in that history, that Minnesota history, that hasn't been talked about forever. And I know for our Native Roots Trading Post, we sold 100 books during the state fair of that.
Yeah, I am so grateful for the MNHS Press, because they've had a long-standing, like, fantastic relationship with Native communities, with Native authors, really diving deep into some of these histories for Native people, for us to tell us our stories from our perspective, and really work also collaborate with different authors. I did want to mention a new book, but I don't know if we should wait to do that or not, because it is a really powerful story about the Mille Lacs Band, that a new book is coming out about that.
Well, yeah, we got a couple of segments and we're going to take a break here in another minute or so. So maybe we can talk about it really slow and then get into it the next segment. No,
sure. That's really slow. I was like, no, well, there's a new, I was like, I will preface that it is written by Bruce White, who is a non-native, but he is an ally. I lovingly call him Uncle Bruce. He knows a lot. He's done a lot of good work with Native communities, and wrote Minnesota Makoche along with Gwen Westerman, among with many other titles. So he knows a lot. I use his research all the time to help when I'm doing some of my work. So I greatly appreciate him. So I'm happy to talk about his book coming up soon.
Excellent. Let's do that. Hey, we're with Rita Arndt, and we're talking Minnesota historical stuff, and you're the Native American Initiative person, and we're excited to have you and talk about it. I love history, so let's get it on and talk about it. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
This is an important announcement for Wisconsinites who plan to vote in the November 2024 election. Leading nonpartisan economists have analyzed the economic plans of Donald Trump and concluded that he would cause inflation to rise and the economy to slow. And 16 Nobel Prize-winning economists wrote a letter warning that Donald Trump would reignite inflation with his fiscally irresponsible budgets. Donald Trump's tariff plan would act as a national sales tax, costing the average family as much as $4,000 per year. But Vice President Kamala Harris's plan would help middle-class families deal with rising costs. In her first 100 days, Kamala Harris would pass a ban on price gouging at the grocery store. And as Vice President, she worked to cap the cost of many prescription drugs, including insulin, saving many families thousands of dollars per year. On the economy, the choice is clear. Vote Kamala Harris for president. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Action, www.abwt-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How? You know that bumper with it always still cracks me up. I laugh every time I hear that. And what, we've had it on like a year and a half. We got a new bumper too from
Dallas.
From Dallas Gold Tooth, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're here with Rita Arndt, and we're talking about what's happening at the Minnesota History Center. And Rita is the program and outreach manager with Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. And we want to talk about what you want to talk about. And it sounds like there's a cool book coming on that I'm going to have to get.
Yeah. Like I mentioned before the break, it's written by Bruce White, who is fantastic, and he is fun to talk to. And he also knows a lot about my genealogy, which I'm all like, I'm so-and-so. He's like, oh, and then it goes down the line. It cracks me up, but that means he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. And what is it the history, or how long does he go back? Tell us a little bit about the book.
Okay, so the book is titled They Would Not Be Moved, in the Enduring Struggle of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe to Keep the Reservation. So that's a long title, but essentially the short one is like, they would not be moved. And it dives into the deeper story of how the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe has been the unremovable band, and how they really lean into that, because there was a lot of legislation, especially after the Dawes Act, to try to remove all Ojibwe folks either to White Earth or Red Lake. And there was some success. There's a lot of band members from Mille Lacs who are part of White Earth now, because they were removed. So they really have a proud history of being able to not be removed. So this book really dives deeper into that struggle and what that really meant for them and how it's impacted them.
Yeah, and you guys, the Ojibwe have been here. There's the I want to say traveling story, but it's what it's called. You came from the east and came to find and stop where you found food that floated on water. Can you explain that story to our listeners?
Yeah, so there was a great migration. Us Anishinaabe were out east, a little more to the Atlantic Ocean coast. And there was a prophecy that told us that we had to move and that we would know when to stop when we found the food that grows on water, which is wild rice. So I always joke because I was like, it was a long trip. We took some stops, but there is a lot of stuff with it. There's a lot of teachings. There's a lot of relationships we made, and then really talking about how different groups ended up places. So it's a really important part of our history. And so we like to share that story a lot.
Well, it is history. And again, I love history. And when I hear things like that or heard about that, it's an amazing resilience and things like that, because following the path, it's not like you're in Florida or Hawaii taking a trek. It was pretty north, and it's an amazing, amazing story. And well, that's about 500 years ago, right? That we
arrived around this area, but I believe we started their journey about almost 1,000 years ago. So it took us a little while, but it was this nice, like the way that we traveled. Again, there's the elements. We did travel north. It was mainly on waterways. So to really move all these people, I can't imagine. I cannot imagine, but it's very exciting to talk about and to think that I am descended from those who migrated so many years ago.
That's amazing. And 1,000 years must have took really small steps to get here to Minnesota.
we stopped. There was some stops. We made some friends. We might have made some enemies, but there's a lot of good stories and teachings that go along with that migration. And so if you don't know about it, please look into it, because it's a really fascinating history of our people.
It is, and the older I get, the more I really appreciate the Anishinaabe and what they've gone through. And now I have to really appreciate them, because my son-in-law is a Anishinaabe, a Leech Laker, so that means my grandkids are too.
Yeah, we got, you know, Anishinaabe, we got it going on, so but I'm a little biased, and it's what I know, so it's very, I love it, and I love our history.
Definitely. Well, let's get back here. We only have like a few more minutes again on the last segment. And let's talk about, again, what's going to be showing and happening at the History Center in the next month or so.
Yeah. So next Monday is a Native American College Fair. It's all day, 9 to 7. There are 4 sessions throughout the day, and most of them are meant for, you know, Indian education students. But there is a public session in the evening from 5 to 7 p.m. So if anybody is interested in learning about those opportunities, please come to the History Center and stop by. Another event that we're having is showing the Bad River documentary, which is on Thursday, November 7th, and it's from 5 to 8. And I don't believe it's 3 hours long, so there'll be plenty of time to be able to talk about it after, to visit the exhibits that are at the History Center, and just to be with community. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That's awesome. And, you know, I just want to wish you again a big happy Indigenous Peoples Day. And as you know, for me, it's always Indigenous Peoples Day for me. But it was great to see you and the work that you do, really proud relative over here. And it's great seeing
you
in the community. And yeah, I can't say anymore. Any last words before we let you go?
I was like, I'm just happy to talk about history and resources for any of our Indigenous relatives. So please reach out and I'm happy to help. Let's work together.
Right on. Email address.
Mine's really long. It's like my first and then dot last name, full last name at mnhs.org. So you're going to have to copy and paste. Yeah.
Or smoke signals work.
You might get, that might be faster when typing out my name.
Rita, thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to do this again. You could do great work. And again, we're really proud of you and speaking for and with our Native community. That means a lot to us because we're still here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mingwich. Good to see you, Robert and Haley.
Right on.
Likewise.
Right on. Have a great day. Hey, Haley, we went and voted today, Wendy and I.
I saw that. Yeah, I early voted as well. Proud of you guys. And yeah, it's awesome. I want to mention quickly the Bad River film documentary.
Yeah.
Just got word today that they're up for the film documentary itself and the narrator, Quanah Chasing Horse, are nominated for 3 Critics' Choice Awards. So if you haven't seen the Bad River documentary yet, I would strongly encourage you to go see this free screening at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul.
And when we talked about that documentary, Haley, when we had the writer and the director, we got emotional at the very end.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Mary Mazzio is a great ally of us Native people. And we've had Bad River Elder Joe Bates on the show, too, talking about it. And I got to say, well, the whole documentary itself was great, but really emotional towards the end. If I'm remembering correctly, it was what advice would you give the next generation to come? And it was kind of, they interviewed these people who are here now today and just giving, you know, advice and saying how proud of the next generation to come. And it was just really emotional and just proud to be Native.
It was. And I didn't want to change the subject back to voting, but I was amazed just before we showed up. We went there about 3:30. There was a line out in the block. So there's a lot of excitement going on with this election. A lot of people early voting. And that was amazing to see.
That's
and hear.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
And the early voting means good things.
Yeah. So you can send in, if you have your mail-in ballot, I would advise you to get that filled out and sent in or look at your early voting places.
Absolutely. Haley, great job as always. Thank you for producing another great show here at Native Roots Radio. I can't say enough about you. You're doing such a great job for us, really.
Thank you.
Wendy and I talk about you all the time and in a good way.
Tina Gigi, thank you.
Right on. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance from Chief Plenty Coops. The ground in which we stand on is sacred ground. We're still here. We are the 7th generation. Vote, 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 vote.
And free Leonard Peltier now.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Travel Wisconsin's Logan Rogie, who joins the show to discuss fall hotspots in our beautiful state. And we'll go back to the future with a discussion about Back to the Future.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of LaCrosse, Eagle 1490 AM WLCX, and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. An investigation's underway after seven people were killed when a dock walkway collapsed on Georgia's Sipolo Island. There were 40 people on it at the time, and officials say six others were critically hurt. Two people were flown out of the area. Andy Cole with WJCL in Savannah has more.
This all happened as a Gullah Geechee cultural celebration was happening on the island. Folks tell us that this is a big event, annual event that brings hundreds of people to the island.
16 days from Election Day, Vice President Kamala Harris speaks at a church in Georgia this morning. Former President Donald Trump has